Our next case is number 014007 and 4008, the United States. I'm sorry, 013489, Orville Macklem against the United States of America. Mr. Stupar.
If it pleases the court, my name is Mike Stupar, and I'm the attorney for the appellant, Orville Macklem. Orville Macklem is today about 86 or 87 years old. Back in 1980-81, he purchased property in Waukesha County, Wisconsin, and the property has been titled to him continuously since that time. About 1990 or 91, his son, Gerald, got into some tax trouble, and in 1993, the government filed what's called a nominee lien against the real estate owned by Orville Macklem in Waukesha County, which consists of some 70 acres, including a dwelling. In 1999, approximately 6 years, a little more than six years after the lien had been filed, Orville Macklem commenced an action to quiet title in respect to the subject property. That action was pending for about a year and a half, and after about a year and a half of discovery, substantial discovery, the government brought a motion for summary judgment based upon lack of jurisdiction. The district court ruled in favor of the government, taking the position that it did not have jurisdiction. It is our opinion that that decision flies in the face of the Supreme Court case, the 1990 Supreme Court decision in the Irwin case, and the interpretation of the Irwin case by the lower courts thereafter. We have, in my opinion, in the opinion of the appellant, a conflict between 28 U.S. Code Section 2401 sub A and 28 U.S. Code Section 2410. The appellant is relying upon Section 2410, which has no statute of limitations. It's a statute aimed specifically at quiet title actions, and in fact at sub B speaks specifically in regard to matters involving liens of the United States. The government is taking the position that 2410 in effect is trumped by Section 2401. If that's the case, that position flies directly in the face of the principle of statutory construction that each and every statute should be given its full force and dignity. As we point out in our brief also, this position of the government again flies in the face of mine run foreclosure cases. In other words, you can have a case involving a mortgage foreclosure where the government may have filed a lien 8 years ago, 10 years ago, 12 years ago, taking the government's argument to the extreme. The mortgage foreclosure could never reach a point where the government lien could be terminated if the government's position was adopted. Now we have an issue here also of when the cause of action accrues. In our brief at pages 13 and 14, we cite law which makes it, I believe, quite clear that the rights of an owner of real property to bring an action to clear title is a continuing right that no statute of limitations applies. In fact, we cite a tax case, the Roberts case, which is fairly similar to the Orville Macklem case in that it involved a situation where a lien had been filed against another, the woman of the eventual owner, the husband of the eventual owner, and the court in the government in that case took a position that sovereign immunity barred the suit against the government, and the Roberts court rightfully disagreed. Now, as I indicated, the property in question is some 70 acres. Has a residence on it as well. The lien filed by the government, the nominee lien filed by the government, listed a street address and the social security number of Gerald Macklin, the son of Orville Macklin, and nothing else. It's our position that that lien does not comply with Wisconsin law, that under Wisconsin law, the legal description should be attached or must be attached. As we argue in our brief, what does this lien attach to? Does it attach to the residence? Does it attach to the entire 70 acres? There's no way of telling. Now, we also, of course, argue in our brief that if we are incorrect and the controlling statute is in regard to the time is 2401 and not 2410, that under the doctrine of continuing wrong, again, the appellant in this case would have the opportunity after 6 years to commence a lawsuit. In other words, our position is that each day that this cloud of title exists against the property, it's a continuing wrong against the property, and the property owner should have the right to attack that lien. That's, I think, the most important issue in this case is, what do we do with a nominee lien? It's not the same as a statutory lien. The government, again, in their briefs, speaks specifically about cases involving statutory liens. This is a nominee lien, totally different. It's going to get a specific piece of property that's titled to another and not the taxpayer.
Thank you, Mr. Skupar. We'll hear now from Ms. Moriarty.
May it please the court, my name is Regina Moriarty and I represent the United States. We of course believe that the district court correctly held that plaintiff's action here was barred by the statute of limitations set forth in section 2401. Section 2410 provides the actual waiver to sue the United States, give quiet title. It contains no provision governing the statute of limitations. We therefore for it submit that it comes under the general 6-year provision set forth in section 2401. In this case, plaintiff brought his suit 6 years and 3 months after the notice of federal tax lien was filed.
Do you believe that the nominee lien should be treated any differently than a statutory lien?
Broad question. Nominee liens, of course, are authorized by the Internal Revenue laws and cases taken together, and that authorizes the filing of these. The Supreme Court has dealt with this and said that not only liens but levies in nominee situations are okay. The statutes provide some remedies for nominees and different ones sometimes for the actual taxpayers. The procedures, what you have here is a balancing of interests of the government's need to collect taxes versus property owners' rights. And the courts have held that it's okay to go ahead and to assert the liens or the levies and then provide for later determinations under either 2410 or Section 7426. Both of those provisions are available in nominee situations. There are some situations where a taxpayer might receive a notice that a nominee won't, but in this case, the letter was actually sent to the plaintiff, in this case, within 10 days after the nominee notice of federal tax lien. So he was aware almost immediately that this lien had been filed on his property, has never fully explained why he could bring suit 6 years and 3 months. He could not have brought suit within the 6 years that the statute allows for. In addition, in 1998, the Taxpayer Bill of Rights were passed, and for liens filed after 1999, even nominees can seek administrative review from the IRS collections, from appeals, or from a national taxpayer advocate. That isn't available to the plaintiff in this case, but also in that same Taxpayer Bill of Rights, a new section was added to the code, and that would be section 6325B4, which is referenced, I think, in the plaintiff's brief. In fact, the IRS has made this offer to the plaintiff in this case, that under that section, what a person who has a lien against his property can do, can apply for a certificate of discharge to have the lien discharged. They do that by paying into the IRS whatever money the government asserts is due or the value of the property that the lien is attached to. And then, within 120 days after that, they can then bring a suit under 7426 to determine the ownership or the rights of the parties involved
and
in that case.
Your position is that is available to the...
Yeah, that is in one of the attachments to the plaintiff's opening brief. In this case, you'll see the letter from the IRS saying, you know, you have this remedy available to you. We've also entered into an agreement in this case so that there is a land contract to purchase this property that's out there, and we've said we won't hold up that sale. Just deposit the monies in with the court, and then we'll, you know, work out. I really don't understand what the delay on that end of it is. I can discuss the equitable tolling and the continuing violations if the court has any questions. I think they're pretty well covered in my brief, that those doctrines don't apply here. And lastly, I guess I would say that the notice of federal tax lien that was filed in this case complies with Section 6323F3 of the code. And the Treasury regulations underneath of there. The federal law controls that question, not state law. So that the notice of federal tax lien is valid in this case. The court has no questions. I ask that it be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Moriarty. Mr. Stupar, you have some time for rebuttal, 3 minutes.
Thank you. Just very briefly, number one, again, as in the brief and in the responsive argument, the government does not address the Roberts case, which occurred 6 years after the lien was filed, and we believe the Roberts case is good law. There's no question if this was a statutory lien that the government did comply with the requirements as far as the filing of that lien. But again, this is not a statutory lien. This is a nominee lien. A nominee lien is really a creature of the Internal Revenue Service's creation. It's been condoned by the courts, actually used very sparingly, and I think rightfully so. But in this case, we have a situation where individual owned property for 10 or 11 years in his old name, no question about it, titled to him. The nominee lien is filed against his property. So I think that in this case here, government, number one, overstepped its bounds, and that this is, again, I think there's a clear distinction between a nominee lien and a statutory lien, and therefore we ask the court reverse the trial court's decision. Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel in this case, and the case will be taken.